May 1940. France is collapsing under Hitler's blitzkrieg. Millions flee southward in panic. But one woman drives her ambulance straight toward the chaos, a 34-year-old American with a wooden leg that causes her constant agony. Virginia Hall had spent years being told she wasn't good enough, too female for the diplomatic corps, too disabled for meaningful work. Now, as Europe burns, she finally sees her chance. The Nazis would later call her the most dangerous Allied spy and offer a fortune for her capture. Klaus Barbie, the butcher who tortured thousands, screamed that he'd give anything to catch that limping Canadian bitch. Yet for decades after the war, her story remained buried. A woman whose courage inspired thousands, but whose achievements were systematically minimized by the very institutions she served. Virginia's mother envisioned a wealthy marriage to restore their fading Baltimore prestige. Virginia had different plans. She wore live snakes as bracelets, declared, "I must have liberty," and chose rifles over tea parties. After studying at 5 universities and mastering 5 languages, Virginia applied to the State Department, rejected for being female. When her father died suddenly in 1931, she escaped to clerk positions in Warsaw, then Turkey. There, a 1933 hunting accident changed everything. She shot herself in the foot. Gangrene set in, amputation below the knee. Feverish and near death, she envisioned her father telling her to survive. Most would have retreated. Virginia strapped on her wooden prosthetic, nicknamed Cuthbert, and kept pushing. She reapplied for diplomatic status in 1937, rejected again, this time for being an amputee. By 1939, frustrated and furious, Virginia resigned. When war erupted, she volunteered with the French ambulance service, driving wounded soldiers as Nazis invaded. As France fell, she made a transformative decision. She would fight back. At the Spanish border in August 1940, British agent George Bellows connected Virginia with Nicholas Boddington of Churchill's newly formed Special Operations Executive, created to set Europe ablaze through sabotage and resistance. SOE desperately needed agents. Boddington saw Virginia's potential as their first female field agent. Her training was minimal, just days learning codes, weapons, and security protocols. In August 1941, Agent 3844, codenamed Diane, departed for Vichy France with journalistic cover. London gave her 50-50 survival odds. Virginia thrived. Within months, she built a network of 90 contacts, supplying vital intelligence on ammunition depots, troop movements, and a Nazi submarine base later bombed. Finding Vichy too surveilled, she relocated to Lyon, whose labyrinthine streets proved perfect for resistance work. She transformed completely, dyeing her red hair brown, adopting modest tweed suits, developing techniques to alter her appearance instantly. She established communication channels through the American vice consul, who smuggled reports to Switzerland. By September 1941, she was coordinating the arrival of a dozen new agents, building what would become one of the most effective resistance networks in occupied France. Virginia's genius lay in recruiting the unsuspected, nuns providing safe houses, prostitutes extracting intelligence from German officers, a gynecologist running a fake lunatic asylum. Germans avoided places with apparent mental patients. Her tart friends ran Lyon's most successful brothel, gathering intelligence and sometimes administering heroin to German clients, rendering them addicted and unfit for duty. A lingerie store owner hid weapons under lacy bras. Hairdressers, laundry owners, elderly spinsters, Virginia wove them into a vast intelligence web. Her greatest coup was infiltrating the Sûreté itself, recruiting officers who could protect her network. Despite brutal winters, overcrowded trains, and her conspicuous limp, La Dame qui boite, Virginia persevered. By summer 1942, she was the most effective Allied agent in France. Then came her greatest challenge, 12 SOE agents imprisoned in freezing Périgueux for 6 months. Baker Street couldn't help. Virginia orchestrated an audacious escape, smuggling tools in cam jars and hollowed books, arranging safe houses and Pyrenees transportation, even getting a legless French priest to smuggle a wireless transmitter hidden where his legs should be. On July 15th, 12 men escaped through the wire in 12 minutes. Despite an unprecedented manhunt, all 12 reached Lyon safely by August 11th. The impossible had become reality. The Mossack breakout triggered Hitler's brutal crackdown. Berlin issued 500 French identity cards to infiltrate Allied networks, and both the Gestapo and Abwehr placed the American consulate under surveillance. Klaus Barbie became obsessed with crushing SOE. The limping Lady of Lyon was now the Nazis' most wanted agent. Virginia's encounter with Abbe Robert Alesch proved catastrophic. Alesch was actually Agent Axel of the Abwehr, a traitor who had already betrayed an entire circuit. By October, the Abwehr was intercepting her coded messages. On November 8th, as Allied troops landed in North Africa, Virginia caught the last train south from Lyon, just before the Germans arrived. In Perpignan, her guide warned that crossing the 8,000-foot Pyrenees in November with waist-high snow would be extremely dangerous. Virginia offered 55,000 francs, keeping her prosthetic leg hidden. As the Wehrmacht stormed the Free Zone on November 11, Barbie offered a large reward for Virginia's arrest, ordering thousands of wanted posters. "The enemy's most dangerous spy. We must find and destroy her." Virginia climbed through brutal terrain, blood seeping from her stump with each agonizing step. At the Mantet Pass, she sent her legendary message to London: "Cuthbert is being tiresome, but I can cope." To which a confused duty officer replied, "If Cuthbert is tiresome, have him eliminated." After reaching Spain, Virginia was arrested at San Juan Station. Following her release, she was forced to remain in Madrid as a correspondent, her SOE superiors deeming her unqualified to run operations independently. By September 1943, Virginia reached her breaking point, requesting to return to France as a radio operator. "My neck is my own, and I am willing to get a crick in it because there is a war on." Her request was denied. In March 1944, Virginia Hall returned to France for the OSS, disguised as elderly peasant Marcel Montagne. She passed Gestapo checkpoints with her wireless transmitter, established herself in central France, and drove cows while identifying drop zones and selling cheese to German officers for intelligence. With D-Day approaching, Virginia recruited locals, from the mayor's secretary to the village postman, transforming peasant squads into organized guerrilla units. She taught sabotage techniques and arranged weapons drops. On D-Day, June 6th, Virginia's groups struck, cutting telephone wires, destroying bridges, removing signposts, planting explosive to delay German reinforcements. She traveled hundreds of miles by bicycle, coordinating resistance groups. Male OSS agents arriving were astounded, watching her direct guerrilla activities with the assurance and good humor of a Sunday school teacher arranging a picnic. By late June, Virginia had orchestrated 15 parachute drops and armed 800 fighters, who grew into 12,000 combat-ready men. Her beloved resistance fighters called her La Madone, the Madonna who had shown them hope, courage, and the way to be their best selves. After the war, Virginia joined the CIA, but faced continued discrimination. Marriage to Paul Gallot made her seem less reliable to the agency. Though she reached GS-14 in 1959, one of only five women in covert operations at that rank, it was her sole advancement in 14 years. A secret CIA report later admitted colleagues felt she overshadowed her male colleagues, who felt threatened by her. She retired at 60 in 1966, without the consultant offers typically extended to officers of her caliber. Virginia and Paul created a comfortable life in Maryland, tending gardens, raising goats, and cooking together. She refused to discuss her wartime exploits, telling her niece she had seen too many corpses of colleagues who had talked. Virginia's legacy received proper recognition after her death in 1982. She was inducted into the Military Intelligence Corps Hall of Fame, honored by President Chirac as a true hero of the French Resistance, and memorialized at CIA headquarters. Her pioneering resistance networks continue influencing modern operations. The CIA's Jawbreaker team in Afghanistan followed her operational lineage. Virginia Hall's story reminds us that heroism doesn't conform to expectations. Told she wasn't good enough, too female, too disabled, too unconventional, she became the most dangerous Allied spy in France. Her legacy asks, how many extraordinary people have we overlooked because they didn't fit our narrow definitions? Virginia didn't wait for permission to be extraordinary. Neither should we.